WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org. This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work Policy and Practice at the University of Chicago, where research meets real-world impact. The master's program in social work blends classroom learning with extensive field education guided by faculty known for groundbreaking research. Applications are open at crownschool.uchicago.edu/social work. Inspire change. Shape the future.
I bet you didn't expect that music at the top of the Reset podcast. I'm your host, Padme Amidala. Kidding, it's me, Sasha Ann Simons. What have we here? You might remember those iconic words from Star Wars Episode 5, The Empire Strikes Back. The line was delivered by Lando Calrissian, the one-time gambler and con artist who came to be the administrator of Cloud City. And Lando, one of the most beloved characters in the Star Wars franchise, well, he was played by none other than legendary actor Billy Dee Williams.
Hello, what have we here?
Welcome, I'm Lando Calrissian. I'm the administrator of this facility. And who might you be?
Leia.
Welcome, Leia.
Now, Billy Dee Williams will be in Chicago this week for a WBEZ event, talking about his life and the career that took him from Broadway to a galaxy far, far away. He tells the story in his new memoir, What Have We Here? Portraits of a Life. Ahead of the event, I had a chance to talk with Williams, and it seemed to me that the warmth and charisma that comes across in Lando Calrissian, that's Williams himself, he still got it at 86 years young. Here's our full interview. I hope you enjoy it as much as I did. So I want to start with something that you mentioned toward the end of your book. This is a recurring dream that you said that you've been having lately, where you're saying goodbye to friends, you're walking to your car, but you can't find the car, and that's got you lost and confused. So can you tell us more about how you're interpreting that dream and what you think it means?
I haven't figured it out yet. But I do have that reoccurring dream, and it's been going on for a number of years now. I don't understand it. I don't know. I haven't figured it out yet.
Yeah, you said it has you unsettled and thinking about your legacy, which my feeling is sort of part of the reason we're here, right? Is that maybe something that led you down the path of writing a memoir?
Well, you know, I'm at that age now. I think, you know, when you start thinking in terms of legacy, you know, what do I say about my life? One thing, you know, when we're questioning our lives, we get so mired these days in particular in the one thing or the other. It's either black or it's white. Mm-hmm. But my life has been a very eclectic kind of life. And my life is always sort of incorporates everything and everybody. I mean, I see myself as the full spectrum of colors. And to me, that gives me a real sense of creativity and makes life a lot more fun. Yeah. Rather than choosing one thing or the other.
Yeah, to that end, I mean, that fun comes across when reading your memoir, right? Your charm comes across, also your carefree sense of humor. And I think that in writing the story of our lives, other people might find themselves in a somber space and reliving struggles and traumas. But with you, we're getting how much fun you had on this journey. So is that right? Has it been more laughs than tears?
Yeah, I would say so, yeah. You know, I think of myself as a walking absurdity, which is a good place to start.
absurdity.
Yeah, you know, it's like I put there's no period to my life. It continues to go on and on and on and on.
You've had quite the life so far, you know, with casts of the most colorful characters. I'm talking about everyone from James Caan to James Baldwin. But it all started from a young age, right? You walk into the elevator in your family's building, and there's a famous jazz singer, Sarah Vaughan. Meanwhile, your mom just happens to be friends with the Lena Horne. Was that just part of the glamour of New York back in the 40s and 50s?
Well, I never thought of it. I was a kid.
Yeah.
You know, for me, it was not glamour. I mean, yeah, I guess it was glamour, but I didn't think about it in terms of glamour. Well, Lena Horne was my mom. They grew up together, and her daughter used to, when Lena was on the road, she would stay with us at our house or apartment. Mm. But as far as everybody else is concerned, there was a building that my uncle lived in and my godmother. And that's where I remember seeing Sarah Vaughan and Hazel Scott.
Yes.
They both were in that building. Ever since I was a child, I mean, starting with a Broadway musical written by Kurt Weill.
Yes. At seven years old, you were only a child.
And, yeah. And, you know, and being surrounded with those people was just something because of my mother, who was an aspiring, she had dreams of being a movie star, and she studied opera for many years.
Mm-hmm.
And her brother, my Uncle Bill, I mean, he was in show business. He was a classical musician. I don't know. It's just things that was just very much a part of my life. I guess I took it for granted.
Well, yeah, I think maybe some of that connectedness is part of what pulled you to this life on stage. But I've heard you joke about when referencing that gig when you were only 7 years old, you said, I cried my way back to the stage because I loved it so much. I cried my way back.
Well, mommy took me to the audition. She was working for Ben Boyer and Max Gordon. They were producers and Broadway managers at the Lyceum Theater. And she was working as a elevator operator. And then they were planning to do this musical, the Kurt Weill musical, the Firebrand of Florence. But anyway, they needed a little boy for a part that I played, which was the page boy. And I went and auditioned. And I walked across stage one time, walked across stage two times, and they said, fine, that's great.
Yeah.
But I was smitten, and I wanted to do it the third time. And they wouldn't let me do it, so I started crying. And I cried my way into show business.
You cried your way in. Well, those tears worked. They worked. I loved in your book how you mentioned, you said your approach to life has always been more of an artful improvisation. What do you mean exactly?
Unplanned. You know, if I say I want to go right, something always tells me, no, Billy, no. Go left. It's going with instincts, allowing myself to go with my instinct. So it becomes a wonderful improvisational exercise.
I think some folks would be surprised to learn that painting was another love of yours. And it's what you went to school for.
Yeah, I mean, my sister and I, my twin sister, Lady, she and I were very, very good artists in school. We went to music at Art High School in New York. And well, she went off to NYU, and I got a scholarship to a school, the National Academy of Design and Fine Arts. I spent 2 years there painting. I was nominated for a Guggenheim.
Wow.
But so the world of creativity has always been my life. I don't really know any other life.
Do you think that you might still make a book dedicated to your paintings? Like, do we have a Billy D. Williams coffee table picture book in our future?
Yeah, I've been working on it for like about 20 years or more.
Really?
Yeah, that's the next thing I'm going to do. I'll finish anyway. It's telling my life through my paintings.
That would be amazing.
Yeah, it will be amazing, actually. Stored away, I have over 300 paintings.
Wow.
So I have a lot to draw from.
So, Mr. Williams, you have played more than 100 movie and TV roles in your career, but we do have to talk about one that really stands out. I'm talking about Star Wars Lando Calrissian. Now, when J.J. Abrams asked if you were ready to take the cape up again for the film Rise of the Skywalker, at the time you said, J.J., I've never not been Lando. So do you think that's why the character has been such a pop culture icon? Because Lando's really you.
Yeah, well, I kind of... developed that whole character the moment I heard his name. Calrissian. I said, my goodness, Calrissian is an Armenian name.
Right.
And I said, my goodness, let me see what I can do with that. And then, when, of course, when I got the cape, that kind of solidified the whole adventure in creating this character. You know, I wanted to make him bigger than life. I wanted him to be more than just a black character,
mm-hmm.
but I wanted to take it further and make it much more interesting.
Yeah. I know that you're also often asked about what it's like working in the industry as a black man, especially over the decades, and about the obstacles that you've had to overcome throughout the years. You've said, though, that you never liked to focus on those struggles and on racial differences, especially when it came to this franchise, right? You mentioned it yourself, an Armenian last name, and you had to sort of make it your own. Why was this your preferred approach? And how do you think that line of thinking where, you know, I'm not going to focus on the struggles, how did that contribute to your staying power?
The whole idea of staying pissed off is not something that's desirable to me. And everybody, we all have our difficulties, no matter who we are. And certainly I understand and have experienced those difficulties, but I don't let any of it get in my way. I take the negative and make it a positive.
Mm-hmm. That's great advice.
That's the other thing. I don't like giving advice, but this is what I've done with my own life.
And you're an inspiration. Just sharing that, someone is going to resonate with that. My personal favorite of yours, when I think of films, it's got to be Lady Sings the Blues. Now, this is, for those who aren't familiar, this tells the story of singer Billie Holiday's life, and it had you co-starring with Diana Ross. You have credited that movie as the one to change your career. And in the book, you actually write, quote, "I saw enormous potential in this project, obviously for Diana, but also for me to present a black man in a way that I hadn't ever seen in the movies," end quote. Was that a lot of pressure?
No, there's no pressure. No, I always saw myself in a kind of a romantic lead character, playing a romantic character, and I love romance. But the kind of movies I used to love back in those years were sophisticated comedies with people like Myrna Loy and Melvin Douglas and William Powell. And I love that kind of stuff. And so I always saw myself as a romantic lead. And I accomplished that in a way that no man of my little brown-skinned boy like me had ever accomplished.
What do you think was different about your career after this role? Because you said it changed your career.
Well, yeah, I became this matinee idol, so to speak. But, you know, when you have women fainting in front of your face.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it said it all. It's very interesting.
What was that like for you, women fawning all over you?
Well, women have always fallen all over me.
I'll leave it there. 100 plus roles later, do you think there are any that escaped you? Like, is there any role that you still would love to play, but you just haven't had the chance?
Well, I always wanted to do Duke Ellington's life. I thought I was the only one that could really pull it off because I understand that sensibility, but it never happened.
There's still time.
We'll see. Who knows? I met him a couple of times in my life. So, he was quite intriguing, very charming. And that kind of charm I don't see with a lot of the young men today.
Yeah, charm is used to describe you, that's for sure.
It's a kind of inherent charm.
Yeah. I want to go back to your childhood for just a moment. You mentioned briefly you were born a twin. What are some of your fondest memories growing up with your twin sister?
Oh, Lady was my Florence Nightingale. Anything happened to me, if I scraped my knee, she was always there to take care of me.
Wow, that's incredible.
She was wonderful, my sister. And she, even the day she was dying, she just worried about me. And she was a Jehovah's Witness, and she was really upset over the fact that she couldn't convert me.
She tried.
Always praying for me.
Sounds like she was acting more like your big sister.
She was 8 minutes older, and she took full advantage.
You know, and speaking of your family, I love that even in your late 80s, you still call your parents Mommy and Daddy, and you're their Sonny.
Yeah.
You're their Sonny. You know, they were very hardworking. You talk about that all the time. So you were raised by your maternal grandmother. The family, though, was very richly cultured and had interest in opera, as you mentioned, and visual art and more. Your mother had big dreams for you, Would you say the mission was accomplished?
Oh, I lived out everything she wanted in her life, and as far as the show business is concerned.
Yeah.
But my grandmother, we all, my father, my mother, mommy, daddy, grandmother, they raised us.
Yeah.
It was the whole family, that the whole unit.
What do you want to say to your mommy and daddy now?
Thank you. And I miss them dearly.
They're watching down on you, for sure. Billy D. Williams, such a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and you have a blessed day.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Meha Ahmed and edited by Dan Tucker and mixed by Micah Yasin. If you are a sucker for a great interview with an entertainer, scroll back a bit in our podcast feed. Not long ago, I had a chance to sit down with rapper and activist Common to talk about his new book. A lot of books lately, I know. That one is called And Then We Rise, A Guide to Loving and Taking Care of Self. Now, it was fun to talk with one of the top voices in hip-hop about everything from his diet to his morning meditation routine to how he stays grounded while touring the world. I hope you'll check it out. And if you come to Reset more for the news, well, we've got that too. Our next episode, dropping tomorrow morning, goes into detail on key congressional races in the Chicago area, including an effort to unseat Congressman Danny Davis from his seat on the west side of Chicago, a seat that he's held for more than 27 years. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. We'll talk again soon.
My name is Donald. I live on the southeast side of Chicago. I support WBZ because of the balanced reporting and covering so much about an issue as opposed to just the few seconds that you may hear on most other news outlets. It matters to me to hear the story more completely